better than Taco.
Episode 69, everybody.
And welcome back to another episode of Exposing Ourselves. I'm Travis Ritchie, and this is episode 69. Nice. This is the show where we expose each other to new things. Matt, a big music fan, will assign me one of his favorite music artists to listen to each week, and I, a movie buff, will give him one of my favorite films, and we come together on this podcast to discuss it all. And with me, as always, is my good friend...
Matt Rundquist. Hey, Travis, how you doing? This week, I watched the movie Rocket Man, and you listened to the band MGMT.
Nice. Yeah, I certainly did. And, so once again, and this has only happened maybe once other time in the course of this podcast, we got together to record last night at our normal time, and I realized that I had watched the wrong movie. I'd watched a movie that I had talked about assigning you, but not the one that I actually had. And
so
it was also, very, very hot here in LA. It was 99 degrees yesterday, and I had left the apartment for a bit and made the mistake of turning off the air conditioning when I left, because I thought, hey, I'm out of the apartment, it'll save energy. And when I got back, my room was 93 degrees, and I had half an hour to cool it down, and it didn't. By the time we were ready to record, it was just down to like 88 degrees, and then I didn't have the movie, and I could have faked it maybe, but I didn't want to do that. Plus it was hot, so here we are the next morning, chatting.
LA has 99 problems, and every one of them is a degree.
Yes, yes, indeed. So how has your week been?
Pretty good, pretty good. Relatively quiet week. We did get to go see the Ghost concert film this week. So at the end of, well, Ghost, so you remember Ghost from very early on in our podcast.
One of our very first ones.
You enjoyed them. One of the harder bands that you've liked. And I think part of that is because they do have a very pop sensibility, even though it's like technically metal, right? But one of the things that they do is they have a front man who's dressed up in a costume, right? And every album, or sometimes every two albums, they will sort of regenerate, and that's like a different person. So it was like Papa Nil, and then Papa Emeritus, and then Papa Emeritus II, and then there was a cardinal. There's a bunch of these characters. They're all played by the same person. Who is the primary songwriter and the force behind the band. But anyways, so at the end of their last tour, they had two nights in LA where phones were banned from the facility. And they, you know, they did those like pouches that lock to keep people from using their phones. And they did a live recording of the concert with all the cameras. They did a couple extra songs that they didn't do on other spots in the tour. They did some dance numbers that they don't ordinarily do. So they did it all up, and then they also shot some they appear to be behind-the-scenes footage, but it's really like extra footage of little skits in between. So it's mostly a concert film, but then it also introduces the idea of like the next main character. So I got to see that. I'm not going to spoil it for anyone who hasn't been able to see the movie. I'm sure it will be available on streaming in a month or two, and you can watch it then if you weren't able to catch the live event. Probably my guess would be the album, the like concert album, is coming out next month. I would imagine it will be available on streaming, you know, at the same time as that. Anyways, Amy and I got to go see that. It was super fun. It was a really, I don't ordinarily like concert films. I find myself getting kind of bored halfway through them. But this one really held my attention. I don't know if it was the skits or just getting to see stuff that I hadn't seen when I saw them live, or, you know, just I really liked the band. But all those things together combined to make it an enjoyable experience for me.
Good. It sounds like they put a lot of effort into it, which is which seems like a rewarding experience. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So how was your week? What'd you do?
So I was still a little slow from the toe injuries, and but I'm getting better. I'm almost walking normally with a decent pair of shoes, although I can still feel like it's still strangely hurts, which I feel like
takes a long time to heal from these things, Travis. A really long time.
I'm so impatient. Yeah. I want to heal now.
Well, and it'll probably be better for like usage in a month or two, but you probably won't feel 100% no pain, no issues for like 6, 8, 9 months, you know.
But well, I hate that. I hate that. My broken ribs, I feel, were back to normal in about 3 months.
Yeah,
and that's, so. But anyway, well, did I tell you that I got hired to do a stunt for a film?
No, that's weird.
Yeah, just a friend of mine is has taken on a career as like a stunt coordinator or stunt choreographer, and he's doing this little indie film, a little zombie something, and we were meeting for coffee the other day just talking about career and life, and I was like, yeah, I've got the next couple of months off. He's like, oh, I've got this thing I'm doing. Do you want to work a couple of days? It's a SAG job, and just do some stunts on the thing. And I was like, sure. And so we had a stunt rehearsal, which was interesting, and it's just me getting attacked by a zombie.
That's fantastic. So you get to add a whole nother line to your CV now. Now it's like actor, producer, writer, and stuntman.
Do you know, I probably could have done already. I mean, do you remember footwear at all from the film I did in college?
Yeah.
I beat myself up a lot for that movie. there's a scene where I walk in on a guy. I'm showing one of my friends how the shoes are stalking me. And so we're in the bathroom. I don't know why, but I fly open one of the bathroom stall doors, and there's a pair of shoes on the toilet watching me. I throw in the next one. There's another pair of shoes watching me. I throw open the next one, and there's a guy sitting on the toilet, and he swears at me and calls me the F word and and slams the door in my face and slams it into my head, and I collapse. And we shot that probably 6 times trying to get the shot of the door hitting me correctly in the head. And so, I do have a history of putting myself in pain's way.
Yeah, but that was not a SAG job, so.
You know. No, it most certainly was not. It does not count towards my health and pension.
Yeah, you're an official SAG stuntman now.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. There was something else. I did go see a movie in the theaters on Saturday with a friend of mine, and we went to see Inside Out 2. And I will just, by way of tiny little review here, say that it's not as good as the first one. It's still pretty good. I liked the idea of the new emotions coming in, the idea that they're, you know, suddenly as you're a teenager, you introduce things like anxiety and shyness and stuff like that. Anxiety was really, really well portrayed in the movie. And so I did have to get past the moment of, wait a minute, we've already seen grown-ups' emotions in the last movie and there was no anxiety, so where was the, you know. Guys.
It was a bunch of well-adjusted people in the first movie, so.
Well, except that they introduced their own anxieties in this movie, so it's like, yeah. But it was fine. I fell asleep a little bit through it.
Oh, no.
And I don't know if that's just because I was so tired or because it was a little boring or what. So, but yeah, it did end up eliciting a tear at the end.
So you gave it a tear. Do you want to give it a little quick number rating or?
Yeah. I think it's a 7.
Yeah. That sounds fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds like what you described, you know. About a 7.
Yeah. I was also disappointed that they recast two of the emotions, and like I think I heard it was due to pay disputes from Mindy Kaling and John Hader, who voiced disgust and fear respectively. And so they recast them, and I don't know. I feel like Pixar should have just paid up.
I got to admit, I would never notice. I really this happens to me all the time when we're watching the second or third year of a show, and Amy's like, "Oh, they recast, you know, Matt Coffin in Wheel of Time," and I'm like, "They did, right?"
Yeah.
And it's not because the actors look like each other or anything. I just don't. And it's not like I have face blindness. Like I recognize people. But there's something about when they recast a role, I'm just like, oh, yeah. It's funny because one of the most famous recastings of our childhood is Becky from Roseanne, right? Sure. Famously recast as a totally different looking actress, right?
Was she totally different? She was still blonde.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a stark difference between the two of them. Like, anyone who has any kind of sensibility would recognize that these are two different people. And until people talked about it later, they were like, man, can you... Or I think the show itself actually references the fact that
they do.
That she's been recast. Yeah. And I didn't really notice.
Wow. There are a bunch of different cases of that. We actually poke fun at it in Robot Ninja and Gay Guy in an episode that we never actually aired, but we did shoot. And it's interesting when they recast someone who kind of looks like the role. Like, Becky kind of looked like the same character, you know, still blonde, whatever. There was an instance in Game of Thrones where they recast a character from, like, between season 2 and season 3 or something like that. And it was a completely different looking guy. Like, the first actor was like blonde, long hair, like Fabio looking guy, and charming and like whatever. And the next guy they got to play him had a beard. He was brunette. He was playing the role in a kind of very different way. And I just remember the first time going through it, and they never address it. Mm-hmm. And I guess I don't know how they would, but what they don't do is they don't make a point to identify the character, to re-identify the character.
Oh, right? Okay.
And so just suddenly there's this guy hanging around and I'm like, who is this guy? Mackinon Daenerys. Uh-huh. And I'm like, how does she let him close by? We've never met him before. Uh-huh. And it turns out that it's that guy. And I didn't catch it till the second time through the series.
Oh God. Wow. Anyway. You've watched the series twice? Not the whole thing.
Well, so, yeah. No, I watched it. I rewatched it before season 8 came out, or before season 7, yeah. Right? I went back and started over because the first time I started it, I kind of started it reluctantly. Mm-hmm. I didn't love it. It was just very complex, and it didn't seem like there was a lot going on. And not a lot happens until, like, season 4 when things really start to move, and then it gets super good. I was just mainly watching it because I was friends with people who are friends with George R. R. Martin, and so we had to have a little watch party. And then it got super good, and then there was a long break, and so I wanted to rewatch it.
Okay.
And so after season 8, I will never rewatch that show again.
No. I don't think anyone has. So.
Yeah, it's... It's just tragic. Anyway, so let's get going. We have to get in the meat of this episode. And you want to shake things up and do the, I don't know, what, music?
I was thinking about stirring things up. I was thinking about switching things up. But you know what? Yeah. I'm gonna shake them up. I'm going to shake them up. Let's do...
I like my things like I like my martinis, shaken, not stirred.
There you go. I wasn't listening, though. What did you suggest we do first?
Music, sure.
Okay, let's do music first. All right, so...
Tell me about MGMT.
MGMT is an American... I've decided they're an indie pop band. You could say electronic pop band. They're a duo, or the primary musicians are a duo who met in college, and they made these sort of swirly things where they were screwing around on their instruments and kind of building the songs from the ground up. One of the things that I really kind of wanted to do with this playlist is I give you 3 songs off of their first album, 3 songs off of their second album, and then 3 songs off of their most recent album.
Oh,
and
interesting.
I hope that you heard like a very distinct difference between the first 3 songs and especially the last 3 songs. So the ones in the middle, maybe you noticed a difference, maybe you didn't. But for me... The songs that made them popular are on the first album, and they're really inventive and interesting and hooky and just kind of different. They use all the tools of modern pop music, but in ways that are just a little bit askew. And I really, really love that album, and a lot of people really love that album. And then since then, it sounds like they've sort of had the edges sanded off of them. They still make good music that's still enjoyable to listen to, but it no longer has that like little spark, that sort of first album spark. You know, I think we've never really talked about it here, but there is the classic concept of the sophomore slump, right? It's much harder to make a good second album than a good first album, because with your first album, there's no expectations. You're working kind of in the dark, and you have a year, you have a lifetime's worth of experience to bring to bear on a new thing. You had something to say.
And also a lot of times you get a little more cooks in the kitchen for a second album, especially when the first one is successful. And that is usually not a good thing.
Yeah, you have that success, and all of a sudden, you're trying to recreate something that's sort of unique, and you can't necessarily, or maybe you can, right? There are lots of bands that have very successful second albums, but you're trying to do something very, very difficult, and that's recreate something that is original, right? And the whole point of it being original is that it's original. Right,
so I'm having that problem right now with my book. Like, I'm very antsy about the second book in this series.
Yeah, so. I did want to call myself out. I only poked you once this week about writing, so I'm sorry. I'll try to be a little better about remembering to tell you to write for a couple hours in the morning.
I appreciated it though.
Yeah, good. Thank good. You. Well, I appreciated the puppy photo, so it's all good. Okay, so Travis, what did you think of this music?
So it's interesting. I didn't actually pay attention to the songs as far as being from different albums. I mean, I recognized that it was a playlist, but I didn't really clock the idea that they were from sequential albums. I thought you did the thing that I like and put the best songs first, because the best songs were first. And so I did recognize that. And they were really fun. Really, they got me eager to restart this album each time I did. So I ended up playing this maybe 2.5 times. I played a little bit this morning when I was walking Coco. Really fun stuff. They have kind of an 80s aesthetic with their synth, like, pop.
Yeah.
Sound that, of course, really vibes with me because I love the 80s so much. So that was enjoyable. And they were different. Like, the songs they feel unique, and mm-hmm. which is something that a lot of times, even with these good-sounding bands, I think I pegged last week's band for this, and that's the wrong use of the word pegged, but I kind of identified this in their music. Mr. Wives was super fun, but not super original.
Yeah.
And I feel like this band has that original sound for different songs. Like, the first song you put on the thing, what's the name of the
probably
song?
Electric Feel is probably first.
Electric Feel.
Yeah.
And it's got that, and I think I had heard it before, mm-hmm. Or at least heard that, beep, 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 beep. Oh boy, I'm sorry, guys. I just woke up, but you know that sound is—it's hard to escape,
yeah.
I guess. And so that's a great thing. And I don't have a lot that's negative about. I kind of wondered if I was so into these guys because they look cute on their album cover.
They do look cute.
And I don't know if that's them, but
that is them.
I was like, oh yeah. Yeah, I'm into a couple of twink twunks making music, sure.
Twink. So I know twinks and twunks are two different things, but
they're very close though.
I kind of like the idea of a twink twunk.
A twink twunk. They share a root word, so yeah. Like the
which is of course twinkle.
For those that don't know, a twunk is a hunky twink. So.
It's like a twink.
You've already
with
got
muscles,
a twink in there,
but not too many muscles, right?
No. Just hunky. Because once they get muscly, then they're jockey whatever, a jock.
Or a junk.
Yeah. So a junk. I think you may have invented something.
I might have invented something. It wouldn't be my first contribution to gay culture. So.
There you go. Yes. I have been telling a lot of people about Nita Menasha Ford, by the way. I met someone from Appleton the other day, and I'm like, oh, my friend.
Well, I got to admit then, okay, so I did not come up with that name myself. A high school friend of mine, who obviously was not out in high school because there were no out people in my high school, but when I told him that I was doing that I was going to be doing drag queening, doing drag. He was like, "You gotta. This is the name that's been in my head forever, Nina Menashe Ford." And I was like, "That is absolutely brilliant, right?" Because it's such a hyper specific. Like 99% of the country has no idea what that is, and the 1% who knows laughs and laughs and laughs.
Right, and but it also like it. Nina is also a first name. Like,
yeah, no, that's how it's spelled. Works. It's spelled N-I-N-A.
N-I-N-A, yeah. It's one of those things where, I don't know, like a lot of drag names are not obvious puns. Like
right.
Sometimes you have to have a little reference. There is a, Monica West, for example. Mm-hmm. I can't remember, was she at? Do I know that name from the gay 90s, or is she, like, big in the drag world?
I think
world?
She might be... I'm not super familiar with her. Sorry.
Back in Minneapolis. I think there was a Monica West. And I think the thing that's... yes, I think so. I think, and because I remember thinking the reason it's brilliant, and we're getting on a tangent here, I realize this, but the reason I thought it was brilliant is because it's a reference to a bookstore here in West Hollywood. And she was performing in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't until I moved to LA and saw this bookstore.
It's called
Monica West, I think.
Oh.
Or Santa Monica West or something
Santa
like that.
Santa Monica West, that might be. Yeah.
Yeah. It's on Santa Monica Boulevard. And
yeah.
So it's just a cool little bookstore.
There's a RuPaul's Drag Race queen named Valentina, which is just a beautiful name, but also the name of a hot sauce in Mexico.
Oh, nice. Yeah, great. So I do love a really good drag name.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyways.
I think if we use the rules that I remember from Dog's Name and First Street, my drag name would be Goldie Westlake, which isn't a bad name.
Yeah.
But it's not a pun. I don't love it.
So mine would have been Heidi Moore.
Ooh.
Yeah, no, it's not terrible.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, that's not terrible.
That's a good name.
Yeah.
So, all right, back to MGMT. I also don't hate their band name, by the way. I haven't forgotten it once.
You know what's funny is that it was originally the management, and there was another band that had that name, and so they just disemboweled the word.
Disemboweled the word. Is a word. I love it.
Yeah.
Yes. So.
So it became MGMT.
I really enjoy it.
The first time I heard this announced on the radio, though, the announcer announced it as management, and I went like searching for management, and nothing came up. Right. And now I think it's pretty well agreed upon that we're calling this band MGMT, and that's obviously very searchable. If they had been named management, it would have been a very difficult name to search.
Yes.
So they actually did themselves a favor. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty good. And then it does roll off the tongue too. MGMT is easy enough to say. Because there was, it's like BTS. It's just easy to say. But there was a band. Who was the band that was Letters that we listened to last year? The boys in their bedroom making.
AJR. The one that you can
AJR.
Never remember the name of.
Right. See?
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
That's a problem for you.
Anyway,
right.
So these guys' music is really good and super poppy. I did recognize the decrease in quality, not quality, but just kind of like
originality,
enjoyment.
Yeah.
Well,
hookiness.
I did find myself kind of appreciating the variety though as we went, and I didn't kind of register that it was three different albums, especially chronologically progressive, but I was like, oh, this is nice that they're not all that same thing, right?
Yeah. I like MGMT. I will say their first album is sort of like head and shoulders above the rest of their work. The rest of their work is still good. It's still enjoyable. I still like it. But that first album is really kind of unique little diamond out there, so...
So I do like that they pretty much stayed with their same aesthetic throughout, though.
Yeah.
I wonder what they would sound like in an unplugged type situation. Would it be any good? Especially even those first hits?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That's an interesting question.
Well, I'd like to. I'll listen to this again with your kind of this knowledge in my head now. I'd be interested to see, and I probably will want to check out their first album in its entirety.
Yeah,
I think, cool. And see what it's like.
Well, I highly recommend that. Hey, what do you give this for a rating, Travis?
So I will say that this is another case, just like last week, where I wish I had been able to listen to this on my hike, because I do like it was a good like rhythm and like beat to hike to. And so I missed out on that. But I think I'm going to go ahead and give these guys, you got me scared away from sevens now.
You want to give it a seven? I'm giving it. Oh, shoot. I wasn't going to say that. Shoot. Sorry.
Oh, no.
I'll
spoilers.
Have to bleep it. Yeah, I'll have to bleep that.
So I think I'm going to give it go ahead and land on a seven for this. It's, I don't think it's quite eight territory, but really enjoyed it. And, I can see this going on my party playlist or even a boyfriend playlist someday.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I would agree with you. Like in my brain, I was doing that thing where you're like, oh, I am going back and forth between seven and eight. I'll assign it one and see if it feels right. And I assigned it a seven. I was like, yeah, this is just, it's seven music to me. I really like it. You know, if they had sort of maintained the originality of that first album, I think maybe I would give it an eight or a nine, but that's where I land.
But you know what? I do think that those first albums are kind of reminiscent of the one-hit wonders that we get, that we got in the 80s, where you get just even one really good song. And then you don't get a whole lot more great from that band. Yeah. And I will say that these guys do better than the average one-hit wonder as far as their quality.
For sure.
Not Journey level, but they're not. They're better than maybe, I don't know, Tears for Fears or Taco.
Or Taco. There we go. Yeah. Better than Tears for Fears. That's
okay.
That's ridiculous.
Okay. Great. Better than Taco.
Episode 69, everybody. All right. So, Travis, tell me about Rocket Man.
Oh, well, Rocket Man is a pretty straightforward film. It came out in 2019. It's a biographical jukebox musical drama, according to Wikipedia, based on the life, music, and career of Elton John, who is one of my musical heroes. I have loved Elton John for as long as I can remember. Crocodile Rock is probably the first rock and roll song that I remember loving, because I was exposed to it from by my older brother. Well, maybe not first. I think I Love Rock and Roll by Joan Jett was probably first. But this is just right up there. And I think Elton John's career, and we've talked about how like Made in England is one of those perfect albums. And I think his reach and his touch and his longevity have been very impressive. And one of the things you learn in this biography is how precarious that was. Like many rock and roll stars, he gets hooked up with drugs and alcohol and becomes an addict of you know, all of the above. Sex and drugs and rock and roll and all that stuff becomes very heavy in his life and almost ruins his almost ruins him. And so the thing that's interesting about this movie to me is that it is a musical. It is a and it's a movie musical. Like, there are only a couple of instances that I can think of. I think Moulin Rouge is a good example of a movie musical that is able to do something very interesting with songs and do things that you can only do in a film medium. And so I think this did that really well. And you basically see his whole life, and they somehow compact that all into a movie, and they frame it around him in rehab telling his story. And I think it works pretty well. There's not a lot that is, I think, super unique here. Like it's a pretty straightforward story, I think, but I found it very compelling. So, Matt, what did you think of Rocket Man?
Yeah, that's a really good introduction. I think you stole a lot of the points that I would have loved to have. No, it's interesting, right? Because there is this musical here that has really beautifully staged and edited numbers that have great costumes, really interesting sort of reimaginings of some of the songs, right? Because they're not playing them super straight. We're not just hearing Elton John recordings. We're hearing Taron Egerton singing Elton John songs. That's an interesting choice, and I'd like to get back to that. But the musical portions of this are the reason to come. You know, they're really, really good, really interesting. The acting is solid. I wouldn't say there's any like spectacular, like, oh, wow, that was what a performance, right? Everybody's real good. Taron Egerton is probably the best of them, and that's good because he's the star. But there's nothing here that made me go, wow, right? Yeah. That said, it's all kind of strapped to like a VH1 Behind the Music story, and you kind of intimated that there's nothing particularly unique about this. This is very like, this was my childhood. Then I blew up. Then I got hooked on the rock and roll and the drugs and the sex. And then and then I went to rehab and got better. Right? That, you know, and I don't think anybody's like surprised by that. Right?
Yeah. It's a very hero's journey, which I'm a fan of, and so you can't go wrong with a good, well-told hero's journey.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it goes wrong. I would just say there was a part early on in this film when I thought that we were getting a different movie, like a not that story, right? Just something that uses Elton John's personal story to jump off into these like fantastical worlds, right? And instead, it mostly is pretty grounded. And then the videos are like kind of strapped to that. One of the things that this does is it sort of mixes up when different songs come out. There's a, like, please do not watch this movie expecting a faithful biographical picture about Elton John's career, because that is not at all what this is. And if you sit there and Google things while you're watching this movie, you're going to be disappointed, because that's not what this is, right? And I'm okay with that not being what this is. I would say it kind of steps towards the movie that I would find really, really interesting, is this sort of like fantastical, like what the heck is going on? I don't know. Did you see Weird by any chance?
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. Quiet you. I'll make a note. I'll make a note. Don't you do this is me making a note. But that's a movie that takes like a biographical story and just like runs with it away from the truth, but towards something really interesting as a story. And I thought maybe that's what this was going to do in sort of like Broadway musical form, right? That's not what this is.
With maybe a bigger budget.
I mean, honestly, the budget's there. I feel like there's all kinds of locations. There's a huge cast.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If this had a bigger budget than I think Weird had, from my memory, from what I
Oh, yes. This has a bigger budget than Weird had, for sure. Anyways, so maybe that sort of operates as like a little bit of a criticism in terms of like just the way that the film is approached. Like, it could have been so much more than a VH1 Behind the Music. And it's not bad for what it was, right? It's not bad at all. Like, I didn't
very
find
good
myself,
for what it was.
Yeah. I didn't find myself going, oh God, right? But there is sort of a long period in the middle when he's like mixed up in the drugs and everything that you're like, yeah, I get it. And here's the other thing. I don't know that the frame story does a lot for us here. Honestly, it kind of gives the game away a little bit, right? If this was told straight without the frame story of him being in group therapy or recovery or whatever, rehab, however you want to state that, you know, then it has a little more of a natural, straightforward arc. And maybe the sex, drugs, and rock and roll thing sneaks up on you a little. Maybe some of, like, because the way it is, all of those early successes are tinged with the knowledge that he has trouble with this and goes to rehab, right? And maybe it might have been a little bit more interesting to not know that, to just enjoy the success with him. You know, because initially, like, he kind of blows up very quickly. Mm-hmm. And it would have been nice maybe for me to, like, feel those, like, excitement feelings without knowing that they were eventually going to,
like,
dark cloud hanging over it. So that just popped into my head. So call me Hollywood.
No, that's an interesting observance. And I think that a lot of people would say that the, you know, screenwriters, good screenwriters, tend to shy away from the flashbacks and the wrap and the framing devices if they can, because I feel like they do feel like cheats sometimes, right? You know, narrative cheats. And you know, now that I think about it, I don't know that we need it.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
That's interesting. So, except for the one of the things that I think it does successfully is with that first big number, it puts us in this mindset of, oh, this is a musical, not a biopic, right? It's not. This movie is compared a lot with Bohemian Rhapsody, which came out the year before in 2018. Mm-hmm. And honestly, Bohemian Rhapsody gets a lot of flack for kind of softening the edges of Freddie Mercury's story, which I didn't see. And I don't see how this one is particularly more, like, gritty and raw and real. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that one of the big differences between the two is that movie, Bohemian Rhapsody, is much more of a straight-on biopic with music, like a jukebox musical kind of. Whereas this one is much more like musical in its like some of the characters sing songs that obviously they didn't sing. Like the characters will sing bits of Elton's songs,
right?
Because the lyrics narratively fit in with.
Bernie Taupin actually sings a song in this, and of course, if you know their story, Bernie would never sing a song, right?
Right. He says in the movie, he says, "I'm tone deaf and don't sing." And you've already seen him sing actually at that point, and I was like, "Wait a second." But so I think they needed that in order to explain, because Jamie Bell, who plays Bernie Taupin, actually quite well, actually. I really like Jamie Bell's performance. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's been around for a while. He played Billy Elliot in the Billy Elliot movie. Have you seen that?
Okay. Yes.
Okay, good. So that's where he got his start, but he's been around ever since then. And he is a pretty good singer. And so for him to... I think they needed him to say, as Bernie, I cannot sing. So, but lots of interesting things in this movie. And I really love a movie musical that does things with a film format that you cannot do on stage.
Yeah.
Right? This movie would never work as a stage adaptation, although maybe they'll try it.
There's a lot of smash cuts to a totally different location or time period. You know, obviously you can do like big dance number reveals and that sort of thing on stage, but the time switching that goes on in this movie would be pretty tough.
Yeah, it would be a challenge for sure. Although, you know what? I mean, there's lots of talented people on Broadway, so I'm sure that somebody if they have a big enough budget, and it would be a popular musical. You know, mm-hmm. Elton John's music is quite good. And I did like seeing, I've never really before this known his talent, right? Known how just he was a prodigy and like his ability to put music to lyrics. And I didn't know that he played the piano like he did, where he didn't really take lessons. He just hears it and can replicate songs.
Yeah.
There's a song where he walks in on his music teacher and she's playing some classical
Rondo
music.
Rondo a Turk.
Thank you. And she stops playing when he walks in. And so they go through the introductions and she says, "Well, show me what you can do." And so he sits down at the piano and plays it beautifully, exactly like she did, and then stops at the same moment. And she goes, "Why have you stopped?" And he goes, "Oh, that's as far as you got."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Revealing he was just playing it all by ear. So, which is, yeah, I loved finding out that about him and that that was his talent. So, I thought it was powerful too. Yeah, go ahead.
Well,
I had more good things to say.
Oh, I have a good thing to say about how well portrayed his terrible, terrible parents are and the different ways in which they're terrible at different times in his life. Very self-centered people who are sort of wrapped up in their own stuff instead of raising their child and just casually like hateful and hurtful to him in ways that are really, really like echo throughout your life and certainly echoed throughout his life. So I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, and I don't know how. I mean, they're almost cartoonishly bad parents, and I can certainly see a father, especially a British father, who probably went through World War II, which was a bad time in England. I can see him being that. The mom, I don't know. She felt like early on like she was supportive, and the gran was there.
Mm-hmm.
Grandma was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was brilliant.
Yeah, a little bit of a shout out here to Bryce Dallas Howard, who I think has a tough role to play here, where
as the mom,
as the mom, she's not obviously awful right away. It's just that her decisions are always focused on herself and the way that the world affects her, and she fails to prioritize her child in ways that are really harmful to him. Right. And so it's one of those things where there's not like an obvious, oh, she's hitting him or something like that, where you're like, yeah, she's abusing him. But she absolutely does emotionally abuse him. And, you know, oh, I don't care that you're gay. It's fine. Just don't ever talk about it or just hide it forever. Right. Like,
yeah. You know, it's funny. I got the same line from my brother when I told him. So
I don't care, but
just don't tell anybody else.
that's really rough. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. It was a different time. And I appreciate the times that we live in now. Yeah. I was going to bring up the same thing about the parents and especially the effectiveness of the dad and his story and how after Elton John becomes a huge success and is a number one, charting superstar, he goes back home to meet his dad and give him a nice watch and hopefully get some sort of recognition of pride from his own father. And his dad has started a new family and has his own sons and is giving affection to those sons that he never gave to Elton and just cannot connect with his son other than kind of taking advantage of his fame in a way.
Yeah.
And so, great moment where he asks him to sign an album. And so Elton starts signing it to dad. And he goes, oh, no, could you sign it to Arthur?
Yeah, from work.
He's a really
my
big
buddy
fan.
From work.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was rough.
I don't know if I have a lot more else to say. Would you like to give this a rating?
I would like to give it a rating. I was toying with a 7, but that felt wrong to me. So I'm going to give this an 8. I would say the plot is so-so, but this is definitely a movie worth watching. It's beautiful. It's great music. Oh, I did have one other point I wanted to make, which is that I think they should have tried to incorporate Elton John's recordings rather than using Taron Egerton's. We love Elton John's music because of Elton John's voice. For some reason, Hollywood has gone to this thing where they're like, oh, authenticity, we have to use the actor's voice. Back in the 50s and 60s, they always used somebody different for the singing voice and the speaking voice. It was never expected that the actor would be the one singing unless they were, coming off of Broadway or something like Rex Harrison or something like that, right? And so I think, we love Elton John. Like, why are we not listening to Elton John's recordings here? So I would have liked to have that. But anyways, this is an 8 for me.
Yeah. I can see that as a good reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like this a lot.
I can see that as a good reason for you to kind of give it an 8 over something higher. I actually am the opposite side of that coin. I really appreciated that Taron Egerton had such a good voice. His performance as Elton John is really close. And I also, from the point of view of this being a musical that you're just watching, I appreciated that the actor was also singing the songs very well, I thought. So I went ahead and had the same kind of debate in my head, but for me it was giving it an 8 and then feeling that that wasn't enough, and so I'm going to land on a 9 for
All
Rocket
right.
Man.
Excellent. An 8 and a 9 for Rocket Man. Cool. Yeah. Well, that's a good lead-in to our very special episode next week. Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't been with us very long, a very special episode is every 10th episode we give each other a piece of media that neither of us has experienced before. I usually try to focus on things that are maybe holes in my musical knowledge. Travis, I think, goes for things that are highly acclaimed but missed out on usually. Travis,
usually.
Do you have something picked out for episode 70 already?
Oh, boy, do I. Oh, so good. 10 episodes ago, we watched Paddington finally, and we loved that. This episode is going to stay very close in feel to that. I finally want to watch a movie that I've been waiting to see for a couple of years now. It's Marcel the Shell with Shoes On.
Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. I am familiar with the concept of this, but have not seen it.
Have you seen any of the YouTube videos?
I think I might have seen one or two of them, yes.
This is based on a series of YouTube videos that were created by Jenny Slate from Saturday Night Live, and she does it with her, I believe, her husband, Dean Fleischer, and maybe her husband is Nick Paley and they do it. I'm not sure. This was just a character she was putting together, and it originally was a stop motion animation. And I think A24 actually made this movie. I'll give you all these kind of details when we come together next week to discuss it. But all I'll say is that I've wanted to watch this movie for years. It's a 2021 film, and the trailer made me cry. And
Oh, wow.
So I was like, this is going to be one of those movies, and I just never got around to watching it. And then when we started our project, this has been on my list.
You know what?
A very long time.
I might have seen the trailer actually. When did Elvis come out? Was that in 2021? I feel like I don't see a ton of movies in the theater.
At least.
I feel like I've seen the trailer for this movie in the theater. And I was trying to think of what movie I would have seen it in front of. But anyways, I do remember seeing this movie coming out and being excited for it and then not seeing it because I don't see very many movies. So this will be fun.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. What have you got for me?
Well, have you ever heard of American football?
I've heard of the sport.
But this isn't the sport. This is the band American football. So
really?
This is a bit of a hole in my particular knowledge. I became aware of the band American Football when people said the American Football House is up for sale. And I was like, what does that mean? And there is a band called American Football that is apparently critical to the genre Midwest emo. I had never heard of Midwest emo, but their first album has a picture of a house on it, and it was apparently a famous house in the college town Urbana, Illinois, and it's on the cover of this album, and it's sort of famous, right? Because this is like a subgenre of a subgenre. So emo music you're familiar with, right? It's like My Chemical Romance and Kids with Eyeliner and so forth. But this is Midwest emo, and I have no idea what this sounds like, Travis. This could be terrible, right? But I came across it. It seems like it's an important thing. Like people know it and they're like, people reference it. They're like, oh yeah, American football, Midwest emo. And so I'm really curious to hear this. I've actually been I've almost hit play on this a couple of times in the last couple of months. And then I'm like, no, we're saving this one for the podcast. So this could be, it could be crazy loud. It could be pop punk. It could be.
Yeah. What does Midwest emo mean?
I have no idea. I'm so excited to find out.
Farm tools as instruments?
I doubt that it means they use farm tools.
Could be. Could be. A nice tractor, tractor rev.
Yeah. Well, hey everybody, if you're really interested in giving us your opinion about any of the things we've listened to or watched, you can email us at exposingourselvespodcast@gmail.com.
Not just can email us, but are encouraged to email us. We want to hear your opinion.
Yeah, we want to hear your opinion. And or you can hook up with us on our Facebook page. It's called Exposing Ourselves. You can search that, and our beautiful faces will just come right up.
Oh, that's great. Hey, Matt, thank you for exposing yourself to me.
No problem, Travis. Thank you for exposing yourself to me.
You're very welcome. Bye.